Début du dialogue 20.
I wasn't half surprised to read that Denmark has decided to fight obesity by introducing a tax on foods that contain more than 2.3% of saturated fat. That means a tax on butter, milk, cheese, pizza, meat, processed food, and so on. But obesity in Denmark is only 10%, well below the European average of 15%.
Last time I read about it, they were already thinking of modifying the tax. Consumers and businesses have protested so much that the new centre-left government is considering changing the tax. One suggestion was to keep the tax on fatty foods and have zero value-added tax on healthy foods, such as fruit and vegetables.
It's here in Britain that something really must be done. Nearly 25% of the British are obese. When the Danes first announced they were imposing a tax on high-fat products, David Cameron said that drastic action was needed here in Britain too, to prevent health costs soaring and life expectancy falling.
Yes, but he also acknowledged that one had to be very careful about raising value-added tax. Any increase in the tax on food would be unfair on people with low incomes. And in fact, with food prices rising and a deepening recession, raising the tax on food is the last thing to do.
But something needs to be done. Obesity is on the point of overtaking smoking and drinking as the biggest health challenge in Britain. A recent study called for cutting consumption of sugary drinks. A tax of 10% on sugary drinks would prompt consumers to switch to healthier alternatives. It could lead to a decrease in consumption of over 7 millilitres a day.
But that's a tiny amount. It corresponds to about 3 calories, a mere sip. It wouldn't be at all effective. No, a tax on soft drinks isn't the right way to fight obesity. Just look at the way consumers actually behave. Most people don't hesitate to pay 900% more for Coca-Cola than cheap, unbranded cola. A measly tax of 10% won't encourage them to change their drinking habits. What people need is balanced diets and regular physical activity.
So what do you propose then?
Education, not compulsion, or else self-regulation by the industry itself.
OK, but you know that some food companies help to run health education courses for school children. Well, during these courses, the children are exposed to the company's brand names, and it's been proved that this probably increases the children's loyalty to the brands. That means the children will consume more sugary cereals, for instance, which is nice for the companies, but won't reduce obesity.
But look at a company like Nestlé. It's the world's biggest food producer by sales. Nestlé has cut tens of thousands of tons of fats, salt and sugar from its output worldwide. And PepsiCo has committed itself to reducing the average level of sugar in its drinks.
But there's nothing to stop those companies from reversing their policies whenever they want. And if they decide to add extra fat, salt and sugar to boost their sales, they certainly won't shout about it from the rooftops. And it's not easy to ascertain what companies have really committed themselves to. When a soft drinks manufacturer says it's reducing the average sugar level in its drinks, that doesn't necessarily mean it's actually reducing the sugar in its drinks. It may just be selling on average more cans of low or zero calorie drinks.
Look, there's already more than enough regulation of food. Even more regulation could put at risk the enormous number of jobs the food industry provides. I'm sure the industry is working in partnership with governments on the obesity issue.
Did you know that the US regulators have decided not to ban the advertising of less healthy foods to children? Interestingly enough, the two principal American soft drinks corporations have spent $45 million on lobbying the US government in the past 6 years.
You're talking like anti-tobacco fanatics, but there's one big difference between tobacco and food. Moderate consumption of food and drink isn't only harmless, it's absolutely necessary.
Fin du dialogue 20.